You're not going to nerd out too hard.
No, no, no. I already feel like I'm abusing my privileges right now. But welcome to the Teen Life Podcast, where we believe that teenagers are not a problem to be solved, but we're here to help you equip teenagers through the power of connection. My name is Chris Roby, and over across from me is Carly Duke.
Hello.
A long way away.
A long way away. Across the screen, though. So it feels like we're close.
Yeah. That was my feeble attempt at a segue, and I apologize for that. Hey, I'm excited about this topic. This is something we've been talking about doing for a while, and I felt like this was especially on the heels of our mental health episode last week, and something actually I've been reading through and thinking through, and also talking to students in our groups about. And this is concept of distancing, or you might hear it called stepping back or creating separation. And we're going to walk through kind of the mechanics of this and why it's important. But I love this because it's practical and it's something that you can do with your teenager. And we actually, I would encourage you to do with yourself before you try it with anyone else to kind of see how it works. But Carly, did you ever watch the old Conan O'Brien late night show, or does that predate you a little bit?
I mean, some, but I wasn't a huge Conan O'Brien fan, so.
Yeah, it's right up my dumb sense of humor alley. It's just absurd and silly, and I love it. But there's this bit that he did for years where he would show the audience a picture, but it was zoomed in super close, like a few pixels, and he's like, you'll know what this is, and they're like, I'm not sure what that is, and they zoom out a little bit more, and they kind of figure out, you kind of see a little bit about what it is, and then they zoom all the way out, and it's just crazy, like something they hadn't ever expected, and freaks everyone out of what the actual picture is. He did that for years, and you know, hilarity ensued and all that, but it was this great example of when you're too close to something, you can't see what it really is. And just in general in life, and it's a really easy thing to make an example of. Just hold anything up to your eyes. It's right in front of you. You're probably, unless you're the one holding it, you're not going to really know what it is until you back out and see, oh, this is what this actually is. And this concept is really brought into focus when it comes to our thoughts and the things that stress us out. This is a wonderful book that I was able to read last year called Chatter by a guy named Ethan Cross. And so the premise of the book is about our ruminations, right? Our self-talk. Do you talk to yourself, Carly?
Oh, yeah. Out loud and in my head.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's when you kind of think about it, it's weird that we do that, right? Like we have a constant inner monologue, whether or not we're cognizant of it or not. Mm-hmm. The problem is our ruminations tend to go negative pretty quick, right?
Yeah.
Our self-talk is rarely positive, and a lot of times can be pretty destructive. And if you don't believe it, kind of maybe journal out, what are the things I've been thinking about today? How have I been talking about myself? Where have my thoughts brought me today? And you know, we often say like you would never talk to anyone else like you talk to yourself.
Yeah.
Which is pretty sad, right? I mean, we should have some kind of positive inner monologue, but it is just really not there. But we also too realize that this happens with our stresses and relationships too. Whenever things are difficult, whenever things are stressful, whenever we're too close to it, we can't make a lot of sense of it. And we can't see it for what it really is. I think about examples of this in my own life. And have you ever had like a really bad job before? Like way back when, you know, preteen life, obviously. But
I have the worst job.
All right. So the thing I think about like my time. Way back when I was an athletic trainer, it was many moons ago. I remember I hated my job, and but what I didn't realize was that I was like, I hated it so much. I didn't realize that everyone else realized I hated it too. And I got sat down for a job review and was basically told, hey, you need to figure this out or you're going to be fired. Essentially, I got like a write up. Remember the time, like, what's like, I didn't understand that. I was like, what is going on? But 20 years later, I look back, I'm like, oh yeah, I hated my job. Mm-hmm. I was a horrible employee, had a horrible attitude. They had every reason in the world to write me up for that. That was totally on me. But guess what? That took some years to figure that out. At the time, I thought everyone else in the world was wrong, but I was the one that was right. They they're coming after me. It was my problem. Mm-hmm. And so it took that distance, that time to be able to figure that out. And I would imagine you probably have something like that too.
Well, dude, the first thing that came to mind was not actually a job, but like a relationship. I have an old relationship that at the time there were things that I was like, I don't know why this just doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. But I just thought, this is how relationships were. I hadn't been in a lot of like real actual relationships. And this was my first big one in college. Mm-hmm. And then like distance after we broke up and looking back on it, I was like, oh, there were some serious red flags and some things that like, I'm not going to use necessarily the word abuse, but just some emotional manipulation that was happening that I was too close to it. I couldn't see it until I took a step back. And then some of my friends, it took some of them pointing out of like, hey, this stuff isn't normal. Mm-hmm. And that shouldn't have happened. And you're right. Sometimes when you're in it and you're close to it, you don't see it. But then time passes or even just distance from that person or that job. And you step back and go, oh, now I see what was actually going on.
Right. Now, Cross talks about chatter, like this internal monologue, as this is kind of how he states it. He says, chatter is what happens when we zoom in close on something, inflaming our emotions to the exclusion of all the alternative ways of thinking about the issue that might cool us down.
Hmm.
And so our ruminations, our chatter, our internal monologue, when it goes unchecked, typically will take us to a dark place and it will, in his words, heat up, right? And it will cause. And so you think about with our adolescence, all the inputs, right? Social media, the really active, distraction filled world, could really, and we talked about this last week on our mental health episode, can really inflame and really build this pressure up where they might not even know what's real because that internal voice is just on overdrive and they are right in the middle of it and just way too close. And so we shouldn't be surprised by the mental health issues that we're seeing happen because this is all happening on this internal tape loop where we aren't able to really get off of that endless track. And so that's when we go into fight or flight. And so I don't know if you've had a time in your life where you really feel like, man, I'm just on edge and I feel like danger is around every corner. It's because that chatter in our head is incessant and not turning off, which is really true and really crazy when you start to think about that. Now, I'm not going to go into, there's a lot, you know, if you read the book, he talks a lot about the reasons behind chatter, why is that a feature of the human experience? That we're not going to go into that on the podcast. That's really technical and really interesting.
You're not going to nerd out too hard.
No. I already feel like I'm abusing my privileges right now. But what I want to talk about is ways that we can create some space for that, because that's kind of the crux of this book, is what we have to create space from our chatter if we're going to be able to move forward and to be able to see things for what they really are.
Right.
Now, this first one I thought was just, it still blows my mind the more I think about it. Cross in the book talks about this situation he was in where he felt unsafe. He's a psychologist. He writes about a bunch of things. He got a death threat because of something he wrote, and he talks about the tailspin that put him into, like where he was looking up security services and he was trying to buy a gun and he was worried about him and his family, and he would stay up all night pacing, like watching the front door. I mean, it was an anonymous online death threat, with real no credibility. Now, that would obviously freak us all out. Mm-hmm. But he said the thing that broke him out of the loop was saying his own name.
Saying his name. Like out loud?
Out loud.
Okay.
He said, "Ethan, go to bed." Mm-hmm. And he said something about that broke it. And he went to bed. Mm-hmm. Have you ever said your own name before where you say, "Carly, that's ridiculous. Carly, hold up." Or
I'm trying to think. I can see how that seems so small but can be effective.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think about the ways that, you know, my wife is actually really good at this, where she'll say, "Lydia, calm down." Mm-hmm. Or she'll even say it to me, like, "Chris, you know," but something about saying that to yourself, saying your own name, immediately takes you away from whatever that is,
right?
And it's like that relief valve where you can see it for just a split second, like, "Hey, Chris, you're being ridiculous." Mm-hmm. "Oh yeah, I am being ridiculous." Being able to trip up that cycle. So we say our own name to break that. Athletes do this all the time. If you think about, you know, the great ones like LeBron and Michael Jordan and these guys, they will sometimes talk about themselves in the third person. Hmm. Or they'll say "we" or "us," or say things like, well, tonight, this game, we," or, you know, or "if we lost, you know, you got to do something differently." They rarely speak about themselves in first person. Mm-hmm. It is about creating that distance to be able to see things for what they are. So even the way that they talk, my son's baseball coach does this. He says "we" and "you got to" all the time. And it always seems strange to me, but he was a high level athlete himself. And that's a way these high level athletes will create that distance between that negative inner monologue so that they can be able to see things for what they really are. Isn't that pretty cool?
That is really cool. It's interesting.
Yeah, exactly. A few other things. Mental time travel is a really a cool technique he talks about, of like being able to pause long enough to see how things are going to turn out in a month. Hmm. Or next year. Like, "Hey, if you keep thinking this way, or if you want something different, thinking about what things will look like if you just continue on this path for another month. Is that what you want?" But to be able to kind of separate yourself out for that, adapting a perspective of a neutral third party is a way that you can create a mental model of like, if there was someone sitting here watching me right now, or if there was someone who was maybe viewing this relationship that I'm having trouble with, what would they say? What are ways that they would interject into this? One of the things he suggests is, and this is more external, but a lot of times when we're in a negative loop, when we're too close to the chatter, is to engage in something awe-inspiring. And, you know, something is just bigger than yourself. And so it sounds really simple, but, you know, going for a walk on a sunny day and noticing things that are around you is awe-inspiring because nature is bigger than us, right? It's awe-inspiring. Or, you know, go do something you haven't done in a long time. I know that's why people connect with houses of worship, because, you know, an experience like that brings you outside of yourself and connects you to something deeper. So something that's beyond you that gets you out. Finally, before we move on to our next section, this is an interesting one by a guy named Jocko Willink. He's a motivational speaker guy. He's a former Navy SEAL, and he has all these great things, but he's this big, burly, gnarly looking guy. But he talks about, he calls distancing stepping back. And he talks about this idea of stepping back and lifting up your chin. And if you're in the middle of something and you're feeling that pressure and you're feeling that negative thought, those rumination, that conflict, he said, take a physical step back and lift your chin up. He said, because what you end up doing is you are physically telling yourself to be open to what's in front of you. You're actually lifting your vision. You're seeing things, even if it's just a little bit more, you're lifting your vision. So you're seeing just a little bit more. It tells your body, that there's more going on here than what you actually see. But you have to be, but it's that physical stepping back and lifting up your chin that does that distancing for you. So this is really practical stuff, and I'm a sucker for really practical things when it comes to getting away from the things that we struggle with, and things that we can do that will make a huge difference.
Yeah, I can see how it'd be so helpful for teenagers when they're too close to it. And so I encourage you. I'm learning a lot from you, Chris, but to our listeners, take one of these things and help a teenager do it. Mm-hmm. If when they're in that situation, go, hey, let's take a step back. Let's put some distance here and think about it. I love it.
Absolutely.
For the trend this week, Chris, I want to talk about sneakerheads.
All right.
So according to Urban Dictionary, a sneakerhead is one who is in love with, but not limited to, Jordans, Forces, Dunks, Maxes, which are all types of shoes. Mm-hmm. Some of these Urban Dictionary ones I pulled just because they're funny. So another definition was they're on the verge of bankruptcy because the addiction is that serious.
Wow.
They're likely to kill you if you step on their kicks. Mm. And they are running out of closet space because the boxes can only stack up so high. So basically, these are people who are obsessed with shoes, specifically sneakers. And many teenagers, but especially teen boys, have taken on the hobby of collecting and even selling sneakers.
So my sixth grader just bought his first pair of expensive tennis shoes. And Carly, I have not gone old man that quickly in a long time where I reverted to my dad. Like, that's ridiculous, you know, but it's a big deal. And they look pretty, I like them. They're really cool. But man, this is a whole world. And I love being able to talk to teenagers about this. We talk about it sometimes in a group. I'll look down at their shoes and think, what's that? And we love to talk about it.
Oh, yeah. This is an easy conversation starter if you notice some shoes on a teenager that look interesting or even look like brand new. I mean, they take care of their shoes. Mm-hmm. My husband, I would call a sneakerhead. I just made him clear the boxes out of our closet, but he has a lot. And we got in a fight dating because I stepped on his shoes. He was so mad at me that I stepped on his shoes, and I didn't mean to, but just this idea that like they spend a lot of money on them, but they care about them. Mm-hmm. And this is something that they like. What makes me laugh when I was looking at this is I think often a stereotype of teen girls is that they're expensive. Mm-hmm. Their fashion sense is expensive. But if you have a teen boy who loves shoes, you know, oh, we just thought that was expensive. This is a really expensive hobby. But I think they love it because it's a trend that they get to follow. A lot of them like the thrill of the chase. So a lot of sneakerheads have kind of what they'll call a grail. So their holy grail of shoes. It's their most wanted pair that they're trying to find. There's status with them too. Mm-hmm. If you have new shoes, if you have cool looking shoes, if you have a certain kind of shoe, there's status there. And then a lot of them buy and sell them for more. So it's also kind of this business model.
An investment.
Yeah, it is. And I'll get back to reselling shoes here in a second, but I did want to talk about some big shoes. I asked my husband, because like I said, he's a basketball coach, so he is kind of really in the know about shoes, and his players love shoes. He has some players who will show up with a different pair every few games. That's just kind of what they do, is they have different pairs of shoes. But Nike Air Force Ones, Jordan Ones, so the high and the low top are both in, Dunk Lows, Jordan Concords, Jordan Cool Grays. Many of these are basketball shoes, but they're worn for fashion.
And probably like wouldn't see them in a game.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. These like exclusive ones. You see like all these different athletes. Like I know, I think Josh has a pair of Lukas. So like Luka did a release from the Mavs, and those shoes are special and they only make a few of them. And so if you get your hands on them, like it's a really big deal. And so it's really interesting. Like I said, I would say this trend's a little more teen boy, but there are lots of teen girls who care about their shoes too. And we'll get into this sneaker fashion as well, that they, it's not just a male thing anymore to wear basketball shoes, but your girls are wearing them too. Now, reselling shoes, I have not resold shoes. So I did some digging though. And a Cohen & Co. analysis from July estimates that the sneaker resale industry is worth $2 billion in North America.
Wow.
And it could reach $30 billion globally in 2030. So this is not a small thing. If you research or like just Google like reselling shoes in teenager, you will find these teens who have made hundreds of thousands of dollars selling shoes. Like it's not just a little thing, but some will sell, will buy lots of different shoes and then sell them for a small margin. Some will buy like the really expensive kind and then sell them and make a big profit. But there are all these apps that you can go to that, like, if you can't find the sneaker you want on the Nike store, for example, anymore, you can go and find these resell and they'll upsell them sometimes for hundreds or even thousands of dollars based on what they bought them from. And so that's kind of this model. But I'll post these links. Sneakers is Nike's platform for limited edition online drops. So you like put your name, almost like a lottery, you put your name in, and then if you win, it's automatically charged to your account, but only a few people win.
That's limited drops. S-N-K-R-S.
Yes. And then StockX is another big one. That's an online buying and selling platform that, like I said, that if you have a very specific shoe you want and you can't find it in store, StockX might have it because those are people who have bought and are reselling. Mm-hmm. And then Josh said a lot of his kids find them on Instagram. Hmm. And so these local shoe resale shops will post on Instagram or friends will post, hey, I'm reselling these shoes. And that's where they find a lot of their shoes. And so if you're kind of wondering, how is my teenager getting all these shoes? That might be an answer. Or the answer might be they're selling their shoes so they have more money to buy more shoes.
Mm.
And so I encourage you, especially if you have a teen boy or a teen girl who loves shoes, ask them questions about it. What is popular? Do they have a shoe that they're looking for? And it could be a really great conversation starter. For the tip, I believe Kelly pointed this out to me, but there is a Google Safe Search option. So from Google's website, it says, while Safe Search isn't 100% accurate, it is designed to help block explicit results like pornography from your Google search results. So this can be turned on personal accounts, on browsers. If your child has a supervised account, like if you use the Family Link app for your Google accounts for your kids, you can turn that on and then they can't turn it off. Mm-hmm. And then also workplace or school devices and networks can use this. So it just kind of limits a little bit what they're able to search, but it only works on Google.
Gotcha. Which, most people are using a Google browser or some kind of a Google device or something like that. So this could be, pretty helpful.
Yes. And so it is helpful, especially if you have kids that you just want to protect. I can't remember if I've told this story before. One time my mom is an elementary school teacher, and she searched something that was not bad, but then one of the images that came up, she was like, oh my goodness, and she searched it. So every now and then you could be searching something innocent, but something explicit could pop up. So in theory, this would help with that. But just so you know, you can still find explicit content through other search engines. If they're looking for it, they can get around it. Or if they visit directly that site, it's not blocking sites, it's blocking search results.
Gotcha.
But it could be a really good option for your kids. And like I said, if you use the Google Family Link app, you can turn this on and then they can't turn it off for their searches, which is good to know. And I'm going to post an article. I think it's too complicated to walk through on a podcast of how to turn this on, but I'm going to post an article that shows how to turn this on for individual devices. So Google devices, iPhones, laptops, all of that stuff. And so if you are interested in that, go view that.
Well, with that, that's a wrap for this podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe if you haven't already. Follow us on social media and tell a friend about this content if this is helpful to you. You can text this specific episode to someone who might need to know about distancing or Safe Search or even sneakers. We appreciate any reviews that you can give us on your favorite podcast app. And with that, we will see you next week.